You're listening to NPR News. I'm Marianne Combs, in for Tom Weber. Religion is making news headlines regularly these days. President Donald Trump's effort to bar travelers from seven mostly Muslim nations is on a track to the U.S. Supreme Court. Jewish community organizations in the U.S. have received nearly 50 bomb threats since the start of the year. And President Trump recently told religious leaders that he plans to, quote-unquote, destroy the Johnson Amendment, a law that bars religious institutions from political activity if they want to keep their tax-exempt status. So how are faith leaders responding to the news? What are they telling their congregations or followers? In a nation divided, what role does faith play in bringing communities together? And what does it mean to be a religious American? That's our topic this hour. And I'm joined by four religious leaders from four different faiths. First off, we're joined by Imam and psychiatrist Dr. Hamdi El-Sawaf with the Islamic Community Center of Minnesota. Imam, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
And Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman of Temple Israel in Minneapolis. Rabbi Zimmerman, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Terry Elton, Associate Professor of Leadership at Luther Seminary. Terry, welcome.
Thank you.
And Dr. Kevin Meyer, Senior Pastor at Wayzata Free Church and former Executive Director of Trinity International University. Kevin Meyer, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you, Marianne.
So I have to ask, what is the mood amongst your followers as you witness the news of just the past few weeks? Rabbi Zimmerman, let's start with you.
Well, it's been a time of great anxiety, in all honesty. Our own Jewish Community Center received a bomb threat a couple of weeks ago, and it was a startling reality. It was one of many in the United States. But when it comes home, I was outside the JCC the next morning, and the woman who took the call had a hard time walking over the threshold back to her home, a place that she worked. And so we walked together. Those are the real life things that people in the Jewish community have been confronted with. But we are resilient people, as I think all people are. And talking to the third grade class about the bomb scare and telling them what had happened and hearing their sense of how strong words are and how those words can truly bring terror to people, and that they're going to watch their words and that they're going to feel strongly about being Jewish, because why would anybody say something mean because somebody is a Jew. And so we find our resilience in so much of our community and our interfaith communities as well. So that's some of what my community has been responding to.
Imam El-Sawaf, how is it going with your community?
Little correction first. I'm a psychotherapist.
Oh, excuse me, psychotherapist.
Not psychiatrist.
Yes.
And being a psychotherapist and to watch the mood of the community, they're looking at, you know, the mental, psychological, emotional state of many Muslims in Minnesota and around the country, and the anxiety. You can tell. We had 9/11, and we Muslims suffered the most. Now this is the second experience, and not too many years apart. But you have 9/11 and now banning Muslims and anything in between. And you have to deal with this. I would say as a minority group, we are suffering the most. Mm-hmm. We have the biggest concern ever. Not even when some of our family members or relatives being banned not to come to hear, either to join their family members or to study or seek some medical treatment and cure, you name it, or those even who are living here. We do not know what the future is hiding for us, what would happen. We cannot predict what would be going on. And that's why in our community and our congregation, when we get together and discuss all of these, It's a huge burden in each and every single one of us, especially when it comes to the imams and the leadership. You have to answer all of their questions. You have to find out, you know, how to comfort them, from little kids going to public school, teenagers, elders, you name it, and it's across the board with that unknown, with that do not know what might happen, and waiting for someone, you know, to come, whether he or she would be allowed to come through the airport or not. We have to deal with all of this, and it's too much to handle. Yet, we see a wonderful hope within the community.
Really?
We see wonderful and a great positive things. It is not at all to be mentally, emotionally, psychologically invaded up here in our mind and deeply in our heart and our soul, but all of us together, united with the other faith leaders, we feel that we can do it. Mm. We can do it.
So would you say that there, going back to the stress that you were talking about earlier and the burden, would you say that in some sense, while there is hope, there's also the sense of emotional fatigue or anxiety in amongst people because of what they're seeing on a daily basis in the news? Or
that's true, but also we have learned, and in Islam, this is our religion, you would be able to do miracles during the difficult time. You have to turn all of those negativities, all of those crises, all of what you have been suffering to a wonderful, powerful energy in order to keep you going, to move ahead, not to surrender, not to raise your hand. No room for white flags. Mm. No, we're moving forward no matter what. And this is what we have learned throughout the history of Islam in many nations and in many areas with many people. If you read the history really well, you know, in that time of difficulties, you can really do miracles.
Pastor Meyer, how are things going in your congregation? Would you describe your congregation as an evangelical Christian congregation?
Yes.
So what's the mood there?
It's a great question. There's a number of things, I would say. There are people confused. There's people who are anxious. There is fear. And for me, as I'm processing this as a leader with my people, I also look for a great opportunity for us to grow, to develop, become more mature people, learn how to listen, how to be in conversation. There's a difficulty sometimes, I think, when we put labels on things. I think labels are a good way to, you know, it's like if you go to McDonald's, you know what you're going to get there. And we put labels and we do that because it's an easier way to kind of say, here's what people believe. I think one of the difficulties that happens on everybody's part in some ways when you get labeled is you say everybody believes that way. And in my congregation, they're all over the board. And so just like yesterday, before the message, I said, let's talk. I said, let's understand that Jesus faced this and he understood these kind of things in ways that really give us some hope and some direction. I mean, he was the immigrant from the furthest place, at least according to New Testament narratives. He came from heaven to earth and had no place to lay his head, and came in order to take people to prepare a place for them and to take them in many ways as refugees, people who have sin. And his whole his message was about the heart and how to bring people to that place. So in doing that, that was a risky thing. I mean, Jesus died for that. So it's really trying to help people understand the bigger picture. I think fear, obviously, is our enemy. And so my desire is to help us kind of move to a place which I don't think we have in our country across the board, some civility in character due to the fact I don't know the depth of our own maturity even as a country.
Mm, that's a very interesting question. The depth of our own maturity as a country. Well, maybe we can get back around to that. Terry Elton, how are things in terms of Lutheran congregations? What are you seeing now? What is the mood? Is there a call to action or a call to introspection?
You know, it's interesting. I get two locations. I attend a congregation that's in a primarily Republican area that isn't politically aware, usually. That's not usually on the horizon. And yet there's been an interesting kind of do we have to do that, kind of called a question within my congregation, but it's pretty passive still. It's a pretty just kind of listening ear, and similar to Kevin, kind of wondering a little bit about what this means. But then I teach at a seminary that has not only people from around the country. We have people present on our campus, but people around the country. So the Thursday after the election, I was in a small group of students from around the country, all over the map, in their own beliefs and in their context. But we also have international students who see this from a very, very different perspective. In fact, one of those students was from Ghana, and he had an interesting perception of what was going on. And so my sense is that at teaching leaders and looking at that, they're not only asking it for themselves, but what does it mean to lead in this time? And it has a lot more urgency for them. I think for them, there's two pieces that are most critical. One is, what does it mean to speak our religion without politics? But these days, that easily can be put either in a camp, a color, or on a side, and that's trickier. But I think the other things is, for some of us that have been in the Christian majority in a place that we've lived, for some, this is the first time they felt like a minority, or they felt they've had to have something to say that wasn't in the mainstream. And that's called a number of people to step back and to ponder. So my sense is, from the leadership end, there's a lot more openness to first listen than there is to talk. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm.
This hour, we're talking about the role of faith in bringing communities together in a time of great divide. If you'd like to join the conversation, when you go to your particular house of worship, are you going to be inspired and called to action? Are you going to retreat from the week's news? What do you hope that your faith leaders are going to bring to you when you go to your house of worship? You can reach us with your question or comment at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. Or toll free, 1-800-242-2828. That's 1-800-242-2828. You can also join us online at mprnews.org/live. I want to build on what you were just saying, Terry Elton, about questioning our role as Americans who are also religious people. And how do you balance that sense of citizenship with that sense of being a spiritual being? And was you contemplate what you're delivering and what sort of message you're providing to your followers? How do you navigate talking about things that have political ramifications, but in a spiritual sense? Any of you want to, Rabbi Zimmerman?
I would start with Judaism being the oldest tradition present here right now. We never compartmentalized life as was done in sort of Western thinking. So religion, the world, politics, all of that was under one umbrella, right? Your ethnicity, your culture, your religious heritage, how you lived life, how you treated your neighbor, what happened if you found a lost article. It is all in our text on how you care for your neighbor and care for your enemy. So what's interesting to me is that in the Talmud, which is a central spiritual and text of Judaism written around the same time as the New Testament, it actually tells us that our sanctuaries need to have windows. Why? Windows to see the world, and so the world can see us. We cannot block out the reality of the world. That just isn't religion as I know it. It isn't spirituality as I know it. Really, it's about having the ancient texts, the words of our sages, speak the timeless truths that were absolutely important in their historic context and are important in ours. That's why I love Jewish text, because it speaks to the timelessness of the values and of the concerns of the human condition. So when people say, I don't want politics at temple or don't be political, I really have to dig under, what do you mean by that? Is it that you disagree with what I am saying? Then let's talk about that. Is it that somehow you want to close the door to the chaos that's out there? Let's talk about that. We have to be counselors, and we also need to speak to the truths of the world, because people come to us with anxiety, with confusion about what's outside, and we need to give it a container to have make some sense out of it, not to fix it, but to make sense. And I think that's where the dynamic reality of being a religious leader today, in some ways you could argue it is no different than being a religious leader in first century Jerusalem, guys, right? First century Jerusalem. Let's talk about that period of time. Oh, my goodness. No, we won't. I promise. She's really worried. But again, that's what we're talking about here today, is that we have realities that we need to speak to.
And how do you balance, and to any of you, talking about those realities while also recognizing that a lot of times people are coming to a house of worship to nurture their soul, to find a place of retreat from the news of the week, to recharge themselves and to have that strength to go out for the coming week? So how do you balance that conversation?
I would just say it's not about speaking politics. That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is the music, the prayers, the traditions are soothing and comforting. And the words that are spoken in a sermon have to, again, be relevant to the time.
Pastor Meyer, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. Obviously, I think it's really easy for people to fragment their lives and put this is my church time. And we have that all the time. And I think that was a trap that people brought Jesus into all the time. And really, it's amazing. I think Jesus was very crafty in being apolitical in one sense, and saying here, like people would come to him and they would say, should we pay taxes? Good question. That's a political question. It was to Rome. They didn't want to pay taxes to Rome. And he said, well, give me a coin. They take a coin. He says, what's the image on it? And they say, Caesar. And he says, give to Caesar, render to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and render to God what belongs to God. There is a holisticness to it, in the sense there is a aspect of we are to be good citizens and what that means to be a citizen. And at the same time, there's laws that are higher than that with regard to what does it mean to follow God and how do you do that in a consistent, holistic way. And so that's kind of what my desire is to do, is to try and help people understand the depths of what it means to follow Jesus and what does it mean to go back to the heart, because the heart always integrates everything. And so that's kind of where I would lead people.
I would say that I would take Islam again as a reference, and whatever God Almighty has ordained upon me, this is what I'm preaching, and this is what I'm teaching, this is what I'm sharing with our congregation. Nothing is coming from me. I do not have my viewpoint, but God Almighty, with His wonderful and a great miraculous teaching, would tell us what to do. There, in order to reach out for our people, in order to comfort them, in order to encourage them to be more involved and more positive and more progressive and so on and so forth. One verse of the Quran I would like to mention in here goes to chapter 49, verse 13, where it says in Arabic, Ya ayyuha an-nasu, inna khalaqnakum min dhakarin wa untha, wa ja'alnakum shu'uban wa qabaila lita'arafu. Inna akramakum عند الله أتقاكم. Translation more or less. O you people. It is not addressing only Muslims or only believers. All people from the four corners of the world. We have created you from male and female and made you into nations and tribes for what? In order to do what? To know each other, to relate to each other, to mingle with each other, to coexist with each other, to cooperate with each other, not to fight each other, not to be in dispute with each other. The most honorable among you, those who are the righteous people. This is actually the peace when we reach out for our own people. And in the meantime, we'll go around. You know, we heard it elegantly from Rabbi Zimmerman, you know, in the teaching of Judaism as the oldest, which is not different from the teaching of Islam, mm-hmm. which is not different from the teaching of Christianity. All of them at the Abrahamic faith are teaching us to do the same, but we have to do it together in order to have a wonderful outcome.
And that's something I think it's worth taking a moment to underscore, is that all four of you, while belonging to different faiths, you all pray to the same God, correct?
That's true.
So here we are talking about a time when it seems that people are being separated out based on their religious beliefs, that certain groups are being treated in one way while other religious groups are being treated in another way. There seems to be a lot of labeling going on. And yet that seems to fly in the face of what that you are all four communities with very much in common as faith traditions. Is that something that you talk about with your followers, the fact that you have more in common than you have that differentiates you?
Well, Dr. El-Sawaf and I, along with many Christian colleagues who are downtown, meet once a month for breakfast. This Wednesday is our breakfast.
Yes.
And so we get to know. I get to know about his three children. I know about his wife. I know about his life. He knows about mine. He asks about my life. We all get to know each other as human beings. And we look at what is the commonalities, but we also have the strength of friendship that can look at our differences. Because we can't always just look at what's alike, because then we lose out on those unique lenses that we bring to the world that
are
so special and wonderful.
Right.
And so we do a lot together. We've traveled together. We hold forums together. It is about building that friendship over 16 years plus. That's what it takes to be an interfaith dialogue.
Hmm. So interesting. One of Rabbi Zimmerman's colleagues, Chaim Herring, and I just wrote a book together that actually came out just as the election was coming. And so for a year and a half, we had been studying our own congregations and putting them in conversation to learn together. And we found very similar, more in common than difference. And part of what was interesting to me is the differences were actually the spice.
Mm-hmm.
They were the opportunities not only to say, for example, what you just said, Rabbi Zimmerman, about the integration. We as Christians have tried to compartmentalize our faith, but that's been more of our problem than being political sometimes. And so it was a wonderful journey to not only personally do that together and work our religious traditions. I learned all kinds of Jewish holidays that I had never heard of and what that meant for my colleague. And he learned about mine as well. And I think that for me is one of the things that we can do better together, is to really honestly engage in relationship, not only as leadership, but as people in our congregations and as people that are neighbors. And I'll give you one really great concrete example. A person from my congregation has been really committed to this in Burnsville, Apple Valley area. And so they have been meeting on a regular basis, and they're community people. They're not necessarily the religious leaders. And they wanted to hold a community picnic and invited everybody from this. We all brought food, you know, I mean, talk about a potluck, okay? And all these different smells and all these different traditions. We had prayers in each of the different traditions. The police and various community officials came. And I thought, that's the kind of movement for us to say, here's who we are. With ideas, but here's getting to know stories. I learned the name of a person I'd been going to yoga with at the Y, but had never stopped to talk to. But he was a part of one of them. So I think I'm grateful for opportunities to be in a relationship with my neighbors and to learn from them and with them.
So just to respond to your question, which is a really wonderful question to say and to root things into, we all pray to the same God. I would say, in my understanding of the New Testament and around Jesus, I'd say more so as I look at how Jesus relates us in unity, it tends to be we're created by the same God, and we are also made in the image of God. And at that depth and that level, that to me is a stronger statement than we all pray to the same God. Because Jesus revealed things about God differently than Muhammad did. I mean, I think we have to add a little spice in here, and I'm not trying to be, you know, trying to do it in a way that's not at all combative, in a very loving way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better for us to root it into the fact that we're made in the image of God, and one of the central commands that you'll find in many of faith is that we are to love God and love others.
Right.
And that's just where we need to be. And I think sometimes when we go to, we all pray to the same God, that in my opinion, that weakens it because it's not real. Because the reality is we do understand God's revelation differently. And if we don't hold that as being important, then we're all fooling ourselves in that sense. But the conversation needs to go deeper into we are created in the image of God. And if we are created in the image of God, I don't care gender, race, you name it. How do we love one another with that understanding? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I would, you know, when you get that answer that, you know, gave that question, I kind of just sat silent a bit because that presupposes some things. And doesn't allow for us to have the depth of conversation that really requires maturity and character and understanding that I think is needed today in the faith community. And it only does happen well when we come together. That's one of the reasons I like interfaith community. Like Dr. Honda, you've been out to our area
yes.
and with interfaith outreach,
yes.
and they do bring yes. people together. We had our yes. Northwest Islamic Community Center
yes.
had an open house, and so we encourage our people to go there and meet them and become, you know, loving citizens to one another.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, important for us as a country right now. And I think there's a number of things that happen. I think we try and simplify issues. This is a complex issue right now. There are a couple of sides to this coin. One is there are people who are afraid and want safety. There are people on the other side of that coin who are saying, it's compassion. We have to reach out to those. How do we have a good, robust dialogue with mature people around things like that when things get so fractured? And so that's, I think, that's the challenge to America. The hope is that we have an elective process, correct? And
right.
and we don't have dictators and we don't have kings and things such as that.
You mentioned maturity a few times there, and I'm wondering, how do we build that maturity at a spiritual level or a religious level so that people can have these conversations of talking about fear and insecurity or the desire to help?
Great. You know, one is teaching people to listen to one another and how to do that and be in conversation. I think another is really helping people deal with their fears. Understanding what that is. You mentioned that when people come in, they come from all different places. Rabbi, you mentioned that fact. And how do we help people say, let's talk for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to actually have good conversation, if we can't have it among ourselves in a congregation, how do we expect anyone else to do that?
Rabbi Zimmerman?
I think we have done it around this table beautifully, and that is to speak authentically from the text, mm-hmm. authentically from our traditions. I can hear a minister, pastor speak from the New Testament with great respect and awe, even if it isn't my text. I can hear from the Quran all these beautiful elements and the nuance of that text that the imam shared with us is so interesting because it makes me kind of dovetail into Judaism. And we are the considered to be the people of the book. I'm proud of that. I love text. I love words. I love this concept. And so if we can authentically use what our faith's foundation is, I think that's how we do it. And I think that's what the millennial generation wants. They want authenticity, and they are flocking to places that give them authenticity. They want to know what their text says, because they want to know the foundation they stand on.
We're talking this hour about faith traditions and the role they play in bringing communities together in a time of political divide. We're talking this hour with Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman, Pastor Kevin Meyer, Imam Hamdi El-Sawaf, and Dr. Terry Elton. We're going to get back to the conversation in just a moment. If you have a question or comment, what would you like from your faith leader at this time, in a time of great instability for many people of many different faiths. Give us a call at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-242-2828. That's 1-800-242-2828. We'll get back to this conversation in just a break, just a moment after a break for news with John Wanamaker. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mary Ann. The Trump administration is expected to argue today in favor of the travel ban that has been put on hold by a federal judge. Two states, Minnesota and Washington, have told a federal appeals court that if the ban is reinstated, it would separate families, strand college students and faculty, and, quote, unleash chaos again. And lawyers for the technology industry are arguing that the ban would harm their companies by making it harder to recruit employees. The companies include Apple and Google, along with Uber. The White House has said it expects the federal courts to reinstate the ban. And now that that ban is on hold, Jordan's national airline is using kind of some interesting advertising to drum up business for U.S.-bound flights. The airline is offering discounts of up to 20% for flights to Chicago, New York, and Detroit. The ad reads, "Fly to the U.S. now that you're allowed to." Jordan is not one of the blacklisted countries, but serves as a regional travel hub. Well, first it aired a Super Bowl ad calling for acceptance, and now the short-term home and apartment rental site Airbnb is following up with a campaign to provide short-term housing over the next 5 years for 100,000 people in need. An announcement on the rental services website said it plans to start with refugees, disaster survivors, and relief workers, but wants to accommodate many more types of displaced people over time. Airbnb's Super Bowl spot showed faces of people of different races and included the line, "The world is more beautiful the more you accept." This hour on Wall Street, all major indexes are down slightly. The Dow off 12% of 1%. Well, 0.12, we'll say. The Nasdaq off slightly as well. The S&P 500 down 0.25%. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
Weekdays on All Things Considered, the latest news from around the world and across the state. I'm Tom Cran. What's happening and why? Join me for the latest here on Minnesota Public Radio News, starting at 3.
Coming up at noon, a new debate from the Intelligence Squared series. The topic this time, should we give President Trump a chance? Teams will argue both for and against. Tune in for that at noon.
Support comes from the Downtowner Woodfire Grill, an Open Table Diner's Choice Award winner for 2015, offering cozy fireside dining for small groups, large parties, and company gatherings. You can see their menu and make reservations online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
This is NPR News. I'm Marianne Combs in for Tom Weber. And this hour, we're talking about faith traditions, how religion plays a role in bringing communities together. We have an amazing panel of guests here. We have Imam Hamdi El-Sawaf. We have Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman. We have Dr. Kevin Meyer, who's a pastor at Wayzata Free Church, and Dr. Terry Elton, who's a professor, associate professor of leadership at Luther Seminary. And this hour, we're talking about how religions work together to bring communities together while also honoring their differences and their own traditions. And Imam El-Sawaf, you had something you wanted to add as we were
yes,
talking.
Yes, definitely. And I might surprise you as well as our audience to add something in terms of interfaith and multi-faith. We heard it elegantly from the wonderful guests around. What I would like to add in here, 30 years ago, Muslim community, myself, and Luther Seminary were able to establish the first Islamic studies department in Minnesota to teach and to have mutual understanding and to eliminate a lot of misconception and misunderstanding and so on and so forth. At least once a year, we'd have a conference to invite scholars to talk about the Abrahamic faith, talk about Islam, Christianity, Judaism, and so on and so forth. With MCC, Minnesota Council of Churches, who have been coordinating a lot of events and a lot of activities and so on and so forth. Related to MCC, JRLC, the Joint Religious Legislation Council, Spin, St. Paul Area Council of Churches, St. Thomas University, when we established the first Muslim-Christian Dialogue Center, again, in order to enhance our knowledge about the three sacred religions, and so on and so forth.
So this work has been done for a long time.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And TCIN, Twin Cities Interfaith Network, where I'm participating in for too many years. And as Rabbi Moshe Zimmerman mentioned earlier about the Downtown Senior Clergy Council, what are we doing? Abrahamic faith, deep understanding. Every time when we met, I still remember a month ago when I was invited by Rabbi Moshe Zimmerman to the Temple Israel, and I asked her what I'm going to talk about. She said, "You're going to talk about Judaism in Islam." I said, "Wow." My reference would be the Quran, the revelation from God Almighty 1400 years ago, with now 114 chapters, at least one third of it talking about Judaism. Mm. And I'm going to share with your audience, and we had a wonderful discussion, a wonderful deep discussion, and a wonderful thing to do at Luther Seminary when we teach, you know, Islamic studies and so on and so forth. This actually is helping us to move forward together, to help each other.
Those are wonderful examples. I wonder if you feel like you are seeing the results of that in the community, in the political dialogue, or do you get frustrated that we haven't moved, that you have to keep on telling the same lesson?
Never get frustrated, Mary Ann. It's really, really encouraging. It is so wonderful. And I can share something with you. Mm-hmm. We're not sitting or meeting or having breakfast to talk. We put already our faith in action. If I tell you with Downtown Senior Clergy Council, now we're having a great project, homelessness project. Mm-hmm. You know, how to help people around, how to care for those who are in need, how to shelter those who do not have shelter, how to comfort those who are living in anxiety. I learned from, you know, everyone around me when I was speaking at Temple, I say, tell me about your experience with Nazi. Tell me what happened to the Jewish people in order for us Muslims never happen again, either to you or to us or someone else.
Right.
I'm not living in a vacuum. I'm not in my ivory tower away from everyone. We're all together. So it is moving. It is positive. It is so wonderful. And it's hopeful at the same time.
I'd like to shift a little bit to something I mentioned at the start of the hour, which is that President Trump has recently told religious leaders that he plans to eliminate the Johnson Amendment, a law that bars religious institutions from political activity if they want to keep their tax-exempt status. So no endorsing candidates at the pulpit or at the House of Worship. So how do you feel about this? This is something that is barred you from saying certain things to your followers? Does this feel like a good move, that you are suddenly have more freedom of speech? How do you feel about this?
This is not going to help our nation to be going on. If I eliminate all of those activities, if for the sake of argument, if I say we do have only 50% of the population of the United States of America are religion people. Mm-hmm. Should I eliminate that half of the society away not to talk about their own concerns and affairs and fear and future planning and so on and so forth? Is it what Jesus Christ, peace be upon him, taught us? Is it what Moses taught us? Is it what Muhammad taught us? It is absolutely no. Mm. It is not.
But so, Rabbi Zimmerman was saying earlier that, you know, Judaism is not used to the separation of, you know, life from church, from religion. So in this sense, is this going back to the way things were?
The Johnson Amendment really was protection in the question that you started with, and that mm-hmm. is, do people want to come into their houses of worship and have it with signs and standing up and saying, you need to vote for this person? I really think it will divide the communities even more. And I really believe that this Johnson Amendment has been a protection of our boundaries. I'm a supporter of boundaries. I think it's really important. And when we see this amendment as a place for me, because I was asked to stand up and speak about a candidate in this election. And when I was protected by that amendment, it was really important. I was asked from both sides, by the way. So for me to be able to say, I am the rabbi to all of this congregation, regardless of who you have voted for, it's a very powerful statement. And the pressure from both sides was sustained and actually met with the boundary that I cannot speak because I'm putting this congregation in peril if I do. And that's my job, is to protect this congregation. Now, when I spoke about the holistic view of things, people did not vote for whoever was the leader. It was a very different landscape. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to be really clear about that distinction as you put it forth, that it was a very different time historically. So it's not like everybody got a vote. It was whoever happened to be the leader was chosen or born into it.
Was a king. Exactly.
Very different time.
Yes, exactly.
So
you're looking my way. Did you notice how we were all somewhat silent?
Yes, I did. There was a large pause after that before the imam stepped in.
It's not going to change the way I do ministry or our church does ministry, because we, I say often, our job is to change hearts, not to change laws. Okay, so, and I also believe that you put laws in place to protect or to deal with people who don't move into the heart. And that's why maturity and character are very important things in the way I look at life. And that's Jesus, again, approached it that way. He said, you know, there's a time when the Spirit of God will rule with a greater law than that which is written on paper or even stones, you know, in the Old Testament time. There's a law that will be written on the heart, and that's the law of love. So that is the same thing we always have to go back to. What is it that is the right thing? And I think churches that do that, if that was to happen, I think they'll flock around the people, and people will leave. People vote by their feet, and will that be helpful? You're going to have people who will move in directions that are, again, what I call immature.
Pastor Meyer, President Trump has he's said he's a Christian, and he has made comments to the effect of, when it comes to immigration, he will make sure that there's preference given to Christians. How do you feel about that?
Should I pass that one on? No.
No.
let me pray to God and ask him. No. And I say that in jest because I don't know. I don't know his heart before God. We can only measure people by their actions and what they do. And that's really an issue before God and himself. Is he acting in certain ways that we would say look like Christ? And we all can view the different actions and things, and yet at the same time, I'm not going to make a statement, is this person a Christian or not? Mm-hmm. It's in that sense. And so that's where I go. I have people in my congregation all the time who call themselves Christians who act in ways that are less than Christ-like. That's a great question.
Is he do you feel at times frustrated that a person with so much power and such a platform might be using the name of Christianity in a way that's maybe different than how you would use Christianity with your congregation?
So let me just answer that by first saying, I think what's so often, again, I'll go back to Jesus, and people were always coming to him and asking him, who's the greatest? And even on the night before he died, they were fighting about who's the greatest, and Jesus is constantly turning the conversation around to not who's the greatest and how many serve you, but how will you use power to serve others? Mm-hmm. That's the question. And that's the thing. You know, politics is about power. You know, there's a humorist in the Chicago Post back in the late 1800s who basically said, politics isn't beanbag. It's not a game for children. I mean, it's a dirty thing. And we get, I sometimes, when I think about politics, we go through these periods throughout our history. I read Hamilton, 800, 900 page tome. I wish I'd just listened to the music. And I really enjoyed it. But what's interesting in that, in a founding of our country, you know, one thing you can thank God for is we don't have people doing duels anymore. So, yeah, there are periods of time when politics is around power and how can I get my power to get what I want and to do. Jesus constantly turned it around and said, no, how do you use your power to serve others? And that to me is the question. And that's what does Christ look like? If you want that question, it's using your power to serve others.
Dr. Terry Elton.
I would love to jump in on that.
Great.
I think one of the things we may all agree on is that there are people in the name of our religions that have been in the public eye in a way that isn't maybe in a mainstream or a way that we would want our religions to be seen.
Yeah.
And I think there are many moments, I will say personally, and leaders that I'm with have felt that that in this campaign and both with Pence and with Donald Trump, there have been moments that some of us Christians would say that doesn't align with my understanding of the religion, or that's an extreme view within our understanding of faith. With that said, we don't get to control that. I don't get to control any of it, of any lead pastor of a congregation in a Christian, mm-hmm. Setting or whatever. And so where does that leave me? Either paralyzed, kind of giving up, well, that's just what it is, or to say, how do I show the love that I understand this religion to be about in the places that I show up? How do I have someone say, well, I'm a Christian, and that person's a Christian? How do those things go together? They may be overlap, but they may be radically different. Mm. That, I think, is part of our job as each of our faith traditions is, here are public views in some figures that have power or platform or whatever, but what do ordinary Christians look like? What do ordinary Jews look like? What do people living this faith in the everydayness that's actually more like me? And I have come to believe that in this time, that movement needs to be increased. All of our people just need to walk alongside and to show that. And that, to me, is a counter to one or two figures.
I've seen, in terms of covering recent stories, say the death of Jamar Clark or Philando yes. Castile and the protests that yes. have come out of that protest at the Mall of America, where leaders of various faith traditions have shown up at these protests and made their voices yes. heard. What is the role of the faith leader in activism and in protest, in social protest? Who wants to take on that challenge?
The role, again, here, it is not my own personal view. Mm-hmm. It is what the teaching of Islam is saying. I should follow. Whatever God has ordained about me, I cannot betray it. I cannot go off this. Whatever the Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, peace be upon him, is teaching me, I would follow. Keeping in mind and put into consideration the circumstances we're living in, the time we do have, the challenges we're facing, and people around us who's willing to coordinate and cooperate with us. As long as I take it in a personal view, it won't help. Because I have mine, you have yours, someone else has his. So now we are in conflict. We're not going to the same direction. We could have some disagreement about specific things. We can agree to disagree, no doubt about it. But let's go to our real, authentic reference to help me. This is what I preach to our congregation. This is what I teach. This is what I share with them. This is what you believe in. Now you have to follow that direction. And in the meantime, with our leadership, we cannot take a side without having a real communication.
So we have a quick question, and just because we have only a couple minutes left. So
sure.
Would you ever say, by the way, I'm going to the airport to protest this presidential order on immigration. You're welcome to join me. Would you say that to your followers?
If it is the only appropriate way to do it, you have to do it. But if there are some other ways to do it, like say, this Friday we invited Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges and say, what do you think of what is going on? You're a leader. Tell us what we should do. And this is a Muslim community consulting with one of the elect, elected leader. This is what we should do. Before I take any step, maybe I'm a foreign national. I'm not born and raised in this country. I came here, yes, 36 years ago in order to pursue my education. But I have some people who do have the expertise, the rabbis, you know, the pastors, the ministers, the leadership around. What would be the best way to do? Whatever the direction is, we'll follow.
Rabbi Zimmerman?
I would just say in 2003, I went to Cuba, and we were encouraged to talk about dissent in our country, that that is what a democracy is. It's very powerful to see people on the streets advocating for what they believe to be true in a democracy, as well as others. And I think that that's why we feel secure in the fact that there can be dissent and there can be different points of view, all getting a hearing on the public stage.
Terry Elton.
I think our job as religious leaders is to see injustice and to step into it. And some of that is by showing up ourselves, but it's also empowering those in our congregations to do the same. And I think that's the spirit of which I would ask those kinds of questions that say, is this something we as a community need to step into?
And Pastor Meyer.
I think Terry said it eloquently, and this, I would agree with her on that. And we step into injustice. We actually had a refugee family that we sponsored that came in on Thursday night, a Somali family. So we let people, again, a call to maturity, and we ask them to express their hearts.
Thank you for this amazing hour, which has gone by so quickly, but I guess that's what you can expect when you have four eloquent faith leaders sitting at the table. So thanks so much to all of you. We've been talking this hour with Imam Dr. Hamdi El-Sawaf. He's also a psychotherapist, and he's with the Islamic Community Center of Minnesota, and Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman with Temple Israel in Minneapolis, Terry Elton, who's Associate Professor of Leadership at Luther Seminary, and Dr. Kevin Meyer, Senior Pastor at Wayzata Free Church and former Executive Director of Trinity International University. Thanks so much to all four of you for joining us, and stay tuned. We've got a noon hour coming up, an Intelligence Square debate coming up over the noon hour, where they'll talk about, should we give President Trump a chance? They'll be arguing both for and against. That's coming up over the noon hour.